Tonight, it is my pleasure to welcome back to Many Rivers Books and Tea, Dave Rico. He is, of course, a well-known psychotherapist and author of many, many books. And, you know, we need several tables really to display properly all of the books. And these aren't all his books. It's most of his titles, but not quite all of his titles here. His very latest book, When Catholic Meets, Means Cosmic, Opening to a Big-Hearted Faith, is what he will be discussing tonight. But as I said, you may know of his work, his best-selling books, The Five Things We Cannot Change, and The Happiness We Find by Embracing Them. He's just told me tonight that he's working on a new five book, that is Five Things, and this time it's going to be five. Is it okay to mention?
Yes.
Five longings. So a new book in process, but this is the book of the evening. Please join me in welcoming Dave Rico.
Thank you, Rob. Welcome, everyone. My book is the result of many contradictory steps along my journey. I was ordained a priest in 1966 during the Second Vatican Council, or right after. And I was involved mostly in anti-Vietnam protesting as the young person that I was. Then I left and got married, and I had left the church because I found it conservative and oppressive in many ways in my own experience. And years later, I discovered the Jungian perspective, found out about the ancient and enduring themes in the human heart and mind, such as one who suffers for others, the theme of redemption, resurrection, ascension, the theme of openness, and then a spirit somehow inspires you. These were so familiar from my Catholic background that I began to realize, with the help of Joseph Campbell, that the human story has the very same images that I met with in Catholicism. So I didn't want to rejoin the church in any official way, but I did believe that I could appreciate the riches in our heritage. And that led me to reconnect with the Catholic perspective without reconnecting with the actual institutional church, which I believe is still conservative, but we also have wonderful groups in the church, such as Catholic Worker, that have a more radical perspective. So my book is the result of all these realizations, and it's helpful to people who were brought up in a religious background, Christian or Catholic, and you want to find a way to discover the bigness that is possible in your religious heritage. Hence the subtitle, Opening to a Big-Hearted Faith. So be big-hearted and big-minded. I'll give a few examples from the book, and then I'll open it up for some questions. And as you see on the cover, this is the Christ of the Andes, looking out over Rio de Janeiro, arms outstretched, wanting to embrace everyone in the city below. To me, that's the new crucifix. Instead of the one with the nails and the blood, it's the same, standing in the same way, but this time alive, risen, and wanting to embrace everyone. So that's why that's on the cover. So let me begin with a few short readings, and then we can have some discussion. Human nature and divine nature are two sides of a single coin. God present in us means there's something in us that dares to go beyond ego with all its arrogant boasts and fretful limitations. There's something bigger in us than just our ego personality, what's written on a driver's license. That bigger life in us could also be called God. Rather than thinking of God as a male figure in the sky, you could start seeing that there's something in you and in all of nature that goes beyond the way you ordinarily see yourself and the world around you. This is an ancient mystical belief in all religions. So what are the signs of this going beyond? What are the qualities in humans that over the centuries have shown us that we are more than just our ego? First, we have a longing which never ends to find order in chaos. No matter how bad things are, we look for some type of harmony or unity. Our playfulness, our indomitable hope, our outrage at evil, our irrepressible sense of humor, our ability to go on loving no matter how people treat us. The durability of our capacity to love no matter what happened to us in the past, including childhood. Our willingness to put ourselves second, even to risk our lives for others. Our capacity to forgive and let go, never give up on others. Our ineradicable belief that there's goodness in every person. Our knack for showing our best when things are at their worst. These would be examples of something churning inside that doesn't go away, that all humans share, and that isn't something you learned in grammar school. There's just capacities that are in us. Our intuition that reveals more than we logically know. Our refusal to accept defeat in the face of unalterable odds. Our power to say, do, or be something that leads to healing. And our abiding sense that the universe is friendly and that there is a loving intent in all that happens. In short, we have it in us to put love before survival, as the nursing infant smiling at his mother demonstrates when he thereby loses the nipple. Something in him is bigger than just getting the milk. The smiling up at mother, a quality in him that goes beyond survival and has more connection in it. That's true of us. We also have it in us to go beyond appearances. This is a way of saying that we have an identity beyond this personal one. As the Bible says, your names are written in heaven. Something in us keeps defying the facts at hand and we are more than the facts show or that our minds can know. Something in us leaps beyond limits, sometimes even beyond the conditions of our existence that are so limiting. So this is not the kind of teaching you ordinarily hear in a church on a Sunday, but something in the religious treasury of humanity contains facts and hopes like these. And no matter how dark things are, we somehow trust that there's a light somewhere within it. In fact, you even learned that in sixth grade at Christmas time when you were singing Christmas carols in the class, and you sang this one. Yet in thy dark street shineth the everlasting light. The hopes and fears of all the years are met in thee tonight. So you said it right then. In thy dark streets of Bethlehem, there's shining an everlasting light, but it's still dark. Yet somehow I'm trusting there's a light in there somewhere, and the hopes and fears of all the centuries have come together to find that light. That would be an example of seeing faith in a new and bigger way than, for instance, we're the true church and all the other ones are missing something. Now, at the same time, we were also taught in our Catholic past, or even in other religions, that everything is very clear and definite. And so I have a section in here called No Final Formulation. And I say, religion is not like the times tables, which remain as is for a lifetime. It's like the dictionary, which keeps presenting new words and letting go of old ones. The lineup keeps changing. No one can say this is the final edition. So that would be true of our beliefs also. Teilhard de Chardin, a Jesuit paleontologist, a famous mystic, gave this advice to his cousin Marguerite. Accept the anxiety of feeling yourself in suspense and incomplete. That was a big wake-up for me, because I always thought, well, my vision of faith should be very clear. I should know exactly what the theology is about. And I read this, and it really set me free. I thought, yeah, I can let it be okay that I still don't really know what this is all about. I'm in suspense. I'm incomplete. It's normal to feel exactly like that about our faith. Religion is not like the story of Hamlet. It's like the meaning of Hamlet, which changes in every decade, but the story is always the same. The meaning doesn't even change. It keeps opening in new ways. There won't be, nor can there be, a final interpretation that declares the precise significance for all time. And all this refers to the story and belief in religion too. And I have this quote by John Lilly in this: judgment and closure are the greatest dangers to one who wants to retain the psychic mobility of an explorer. If you want to be an explorer, you can't have come in with a closed book. Map closed book, that's for somebody going from here to San Francisco. There's a way to go and the map will tell you. Explorer isn't doing that. He wants to find out about new paths. All right, so any questions or ideas about this part before I go on? I just want to check in with everybody. This, what I've said so far, kind of gives you the style of the way the book is written. It's not trying to push Catholicism on you or make you into a Catholic, but if you are from a Catholic background, this updates you and brings you into the more cosmically oriented world. But if you didn't have a Catholic background, it helps you understand how religion could somehow have a bigness that helps you. Yeah. You had a question?
Well, no, just to answer what you were asking, you mean instead of just memorizing and learning facts, you're saying it's alive within you and you're discovering as you go along and as it applies to you in a real way instead of just head knowledge.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, that would be a good way to put it. And it keeps opening in new ways. The reason it keeps opening in new ways is because it's entirely based on and fully consonant with the vast treasury of images and archetypes in the human psyche. It's not just made up. Whoever put this together looked carefully into what it was all about to be human and what it was all about to be on a mystical path. Other ideas? Or questions? Everybody following the basic concepts?
Could you expand a little bit on, you said something about the archetypes.
Okay.
Could you expand on that just a little
yes.
bit? Because that resonates a little bit with me as part of my background and my upbringing. And I'd like to try and understand that concept.
Okay. It basically refers to common themes, often common themes and characters often appearing in stories that are familiar the world over and that keep coming back into our storytelling and into our life experience. And these characters, which seem to be in stories that we are familiar with, especially myths and fairy tales, are actually characters and possibilities, capacities, energies in all of us. For instance, let's say the story of someone who's lost and wants to find a way home. That would be an example of an archetype. Let's say a lost little girl. A lost little girl is not at home. She is far from home, doesn't know yet how to get home. So she looks for someone to help her. This someone says, go this way and you will find what you're looking for. She does this and soon she meets two kinds of people. People who help her, those are called assisting forces, and people who try to harm her, those are called afflicting forces. She fights with the afflicting, she's helped by the assisting, and then finally she discovers the way home, and when she gets home, she's bigger, wiser, smarter, more loving than when she began. So that would be the archetype of a little lost girl who finds her way home. Now you take that and you place it into the Wizard of Oz. Now you got Dorothy, the three friends who helped her, the wicked witch, the good witch tells her where to go, and you see how, oh, that story. And then there will be stories just like that one, with a boy or a girl lost, and often an animal, that's an important part of the story, who the little dog in the story is quite crucial, because he's the one who starts it all off, because she only leaves home because the dog's in trouble. So that would be an example of an archetypal story, one that's full of characters that are all familiar. Robin Hood has the merry men. Those are his assisting forces. But he also has the Sheriff of Nottingham, King John, and Sir Guy, who are his enemies. Luke Skywalker has Harrison Ford and little computers and so forth to help him, and he has the Darth Vader to harm him, and so forth. So it's the same story over and over. That's what's meant by an archetype. And the story of Jesus is in that very category, same exact category. Somebody who comes, brings healing, brings a new way of living, and is thereby and therefore condemned, hated, and put to death. But what he has brought is bigger than anyone can kill, and that's called resurrection. Same thing happened to Martin Luther King, same thing happened to Gandhi, same thing happened to the martyrs. So it's all, but the meaning of archetypes is that all those same energies are inside all of us. So I have the Darth Vader within me, and I also have the computers helping me. I am both. I am Luke Skywalker and I am Darth Vader. In fact, that's why he finds out he's his father. That's a way of saying, oh, we're the same blood. We're one and the same. We're just two sides of one coin. It's a very important point in the story. But those same archetypes you will find in religions that have a richness to them, such as Judaism, Catholicism, etc. Other questions about this? All right, so a feature of the bigness would be to discover that the wholeness is already inside you, rather than I'm nobody and limited and God is everything. At some level that's true, but at another level we also have the wholeness in us. And these would be some declarations of our spiritual wholeness. Oh, and by the way, the difference between religion and spirituality, which I also talk about in here. So religion is made up, all religions are made up of the four same components. Something to believe, that would be your creed. Like you believe there's a God. You believe this God is Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. You believe there's a heaven or hell. So those are your beliefs. Secondly, a morality. Ten Commandments. Sermon on the Mount. How to live your life in a moral way. Third, rituals. Sermons, hymns, mass, religious ceremonies of all kinds. And finally, devotion. A personal relationship to the God or saint that you honor. You feel like you have a, like he loves you, you love him, you have a motherly figure, Virgin Mary loves you, you love her. That's called devotion. When those four come from an institution and they're all mapped out for you, it's called religion. When those four are made up by you, it's called spirituality. They're both the same, but one is off the rack, and the other one is tailored. Not only by you, but by Eckhart Tolle and me and, you know, all the other people whose books you read. They help you set up your four components. So when somebody is killed on the freeway, you will see little clump of flowers and candles because somebody did the ritual of memorializing the person who died in this terrible accident. That would be an example of a religious ritual, candles, flowers, but it's done by any individual. It's not done by an established church. Does this make sense to everybody? So anyway, regarding the wholeness,
so I'm always... Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Just to clarify that point.
Yes.
That you made. So are you saying that the candles, the altar, whatever, that is put there by an individual, that is religion or is that spirituality?
No. All these things here, all these, this is for you to have your own altar, your own rituals, your own devotional life. Now, if you go into the Catholic Church, there's a statue of St. Anthony, statue of St. Teresa, statue of the Virgin Mary, statue of the Sacred Heart. You can't bring these things in there. They have their own established images. That's religion. You want to take some of these and make your own little altar? That's your spiritual choice. Does this make sense?
Yes.
It's not that big a difference, in my perspective. All right, so I'm always opening myself to more consciousness that is more light. I notice now what I'm up to, what my potential is, and where grace awaits me or calls me. This is what happens to you when you come from a spiritual perspective, which you can do within a religious membership. Sometimes I fall down in my resolve to love generously. I admit this without despair. I accept myself as I am, neither condoning what I have done nor castigating myself for it. I make amends to those I have hurt. I accept responsibility for the consequences I caused. This is what you sound like when you learned about confession and penance. This is your version of it, in big terms. Sense of wholeness in this. Rather than, oh, I have to go to the priest and get forgiven. You could still do that too, but this has the bigness in it that makes you the one who can move in this direction. I now create an atmosphere of forgiveness and mendable failures in all my relationships. No one is perfect, and no one is permanently excluded from my circle of love. I'm never at ease as long as I have even one grudge left. I see that the armor that was protecting me from fear was actually preventing me from being fully free of it. Now I admit my fears, feel them fully, and are no longer letting them stop me. I am combining less defense and more resource. I realize that acknowledging a higher power does not excuse me from any of the conditions of an ordinary existence, only give me more resilience. Spirituality for me is like an immune system. It does not prevent sickness, but it does make for faster recovery and sometimes less future susceptibility. I trust that I have a unique and significant destiny, and that everything that happens to me is part of its unfolding. Synchronous events, meaningful coincidences, and meetings keep happening for just that reason. What is my destiny? It is to reach a mystical union through both a healthy personality and an evolved spirituality. My destiny is thus a holy communion of the human, the natural, and the divine. I make a fervent commitment to love wisely and to bring healing into the world. And finally, grace is the life force that energizes my spiritual potential. This force is the same in me, in nature, and in God. So something, we know not what, is always lovingly at work, we know not how, to make us more than we are now, and to make the world more than it is yet. That something is what we call God, and it's the same as the life force of nature and the life force of ourselves. That would be bigness of spirituality. This yes attitude of surrender that lets go of the grasping ego allows our inner wholeness, the true center of identity, God within us, to make a personal appearance. Questions about any of these ideas?
That is so nicely said.
Thank you.
You know, like a lot of people will argue, oh, it's, you know, God is in nature, or, you know, God is, you know, tries to exclude this or that, but to say that it's all the same and all apart, that's, well, it's optimistic. It's all inclusive, and it's very
nice. It is optimistic.
It's very nice.
Well, thank you.
Sounds right.
Yeah.
It
does feel right,
too. The other thing, too. You make it seem simple.
Well, it is simple in many
hard
ways.
Hard work, but...
Yes, it does take work. But we're always being assisted by forces, you know, that's grace. Grace is symbolized by the assisting forces. In fact, grace is the archetype of the assisting force. When she, Dorothy, met the three friends, they're like three graces. What are graces? Helps that came to you without you having to ask or even deserve. They just came along out of nowhere. Same thing happened to Luke when he met Obi-Wan Kenobi. He's the archetype of wisdom, the one who shows you the wise way. Don't be hanging around with your little car with no wheels. You've got a bigger destiny. Come on. Let me give you the sword combination. You're going to learn to use that sword, but call upon the force. The force is the grace. It's not just sword like Robin Hood. It's sword and force. What is force, capital F? That's the higher power, the spiritual power. Dorothy asked for that kind of thing from the wizard. She said, I guess you don't have anything in that bag for me. He said, no, there's nothing in here for you. Your force is within. Other questions or ideas? So that's what I'm trying to do in here. It's more about spirituality than about religion. And I try to, you know, put some of these things together in ways that finally help us make sense of it. Some things will never make much sense, but at other times we find some wonderful possibilities from our childhood religion. Now here's a quote from John Woolman. He is a Quaker, 18th century?
Yeah, early.
And he wrote a famous book called The Quaker Journal. And I want to read you one of his entries. He was anti-slavery in England during his lifetime. Our gracious Creator cares and provides for all his creatures. So within the archetype of God is some sense of someone who wants to help you. His tender mercies are over all his works, all the things in nature. Those show you his mercies. He had so much love that he gave you oranges and lemons and cauliflower and dogs and cats. And so far as his love influences our minds, so far as we become interested in his works, in other words, so far as we love the world the way he does, and feel a desire to take hold of every opportunity to lessen the sufferings of others, we increase the happiness of all creation. So that would be a purpose of spirituality. Here we have a prospect of one common interest, that we could all have the same interest: relieve suffering, love the world, from which our own is inseparable. So we also care about ourselves. Something like the Buddhist practice of loving kindness, where you beam that loving kindness to yourself and then to everyone. And this is the part reason I chose the quote, this final phrase: to turn all that we possess into the channel of universal love. That is the whole business of our lives. To turn all that we possess into the channel of universal love. He's saying, we're here to take everything that happens and turn it into a loving response toward ourselves, others, and all of nature. That would be an example of an inspired statement. What does inspired mean? That in a particular moment, that of God in every person starts to talk. And it says things like this: take all that you possess and put it into the channel of universal love. Universal love. Don't just love English people. Don't just love the white ones. This was new. That becomes the business of our lives. And to use the word business, which, you know, usually refers to money. So this is our business. And I think all of us have had these moments of inspiration. Saying the Pope is infallible. It's an archetype. It's the archetype of infallible wisdom. Where is this archetype of infallible wisdom? Is it only in that man in Rome? No, it's in every single person. When he said, the whole business of our lives is universal love, he was speaking infallibly. When you suddenly got it, wait a minute, I'm not just here to love my family, I should be loving everybody. That was your infallible wisdom. That archetype is in everybody. Other ideas or questions? Yes.
No. What page was that on, first of all?
That was on 145.
And may I add a comment?
Yes, please.
Which is, you know, I've always wondered why there's so much adversity in the world and, you know, things to overcome. And what you just said sort of make some sense out of that, because if we respond to these situations with universal love, which I think you're saying, rather than react to it from the ego, and if we respond from universal love, we're benefiting someone else in the world, but I think we're also growing spiritually at the same time. So I wonder if maybe that's the reason for being here in the first place, is it's sort of like boot camp, or some really intense situation where
yes.
you have a choice. You can either respond with love and grow,
yes.
or you can react in a negative way and then get more negativity come back to you. So it's like it's like St. Francis' prayer. You know, whatever comes to you, he has all these negatives. You just do the opposite.
Yeah.
So I don't know. What do
that
you
would
think
be
about?
A wonderful. I agree with you
yeah.
totally, and that would be a wonderful calling. Calling. What is a calling? A feeling as if you're being drawn in a direction that you did not necessarily choose on your own feels like it's something beyond your own left brain mind that is appealing to you to open up a whole new potential in yourself, or to use a gift inside that you didn't ever even know you had. And it doesn't have to be some fancy big thing. It doesn't have to be an heroic act. It can even be I turned into a nice person. Other questions on that? I wanted to share this poem by Emily Dickinson because, of course, she was brought up in a religious household, and she's an American poet of Civil War times, and she rejected her religious institution, but she stayed very close to all the religious images, even basing her style of writing poems to some extent on the hymns that she would sing in church. And her poems, as you will hear in this one and in all of them, are full of these religious images. So she's an example of somebody who is not attached to a particular religion, but she is still moved by these religious and spiritual themes. Anyway, this is her poem in which she talks about her religious story. The second word of the poem is seated. It's spelled C-E-D-E-D. To cede is to surrender or give up territory. As in, after the war, Germany ceded land to Poland. I'm ceded. I've stopped being theirs. The name they dropped upon my head with water in the country church is finished using now. And they can put it with my dolls, my childhood, and the string of spools I finished threading too. Baptized before without the choice, but this time consciously of grace, unto supremest name, call to my full, the crescent dropped, existence's whole arc filled up with one small diadem. My second rank, too small the first, crowned, crowing on my father's breast, a half-unconscious queen, but this time adequate, erect, with will to choose and to reject, and I choose a crown. So,
what was the
that,
crown?
Talk about full power.
Okay.
Talk about crown as an archetype of power. Talk about how you make your statement of your new spiritual identity. Call to my full. Given the name Emily, and she says, now I've been called to supremest name. I don't have the little name they gave me. I have a new name. It's big. And the crescent dropped. I'm no longer a little crescent moon. Now I'm a full moon. It's full of wonderful images from nature and religion. But you get the basic, that's what I call a calling. She was called from the limited imagination of her childhood connections to the Puritan religion of her father into a whole new vast world of creativity. And you can do that while remaining somehow with religion or somehow moving away from it. So this doesn't tell you to go back, it just shows you where you came from and how to take something from what you came from that you can use for what comes next. So thank you all for your attention, and I'll be up here if you want one of my books. But before you go, I brought my I brought these cards, which I'd like to give out, and ends with this wonderful affirmation. And I think you will appreciate it. Okay, you have some extras?
I think so.
Okay. Who does not have? And I have extra ones, so I'll have them up here if you want one for a friend. And this is from one of my other books, but it kind of shows where you can, when you hear it, you'll pick up on how our religion still influences me. And I say this every morning. I say yes to everything that happens to me today as an opportunity to give and receive love without reserve. I am thankful for the enduring capacity to love that has come to me from the Sacred Heart of the universe. May everything that happens to me today open my heart more and more May all that I think, say, feel, and do express loving kindness toward myself, those close to me, and all beings. May love always be my life purpose, my bliss, my destiny, the richest grace I can receive or give. And may I always be especially compassionate toward those who are lost or least, alone or less. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Love the alliteration at the end there, by the way.
Thank you.
As is our custom, I will inform you that there is a donation bowl over there. We encourage you to contribute to it. We help to maintain this space, and the staffing needs to create it every week through your generosity. We share our speakers the proceeds as well. And of course, as I pointed out earlier, but I will point out again, we have a lot of copies of this latest book that you just heard so many wonderful words about, as well as many, many of the other, at least I think, plus 10 Dave's other books as well here. So please linger, purchase, and we look forward to seeing you again at Many Rivers Books. Thank you all so much for coming
tonight.
Thank you.